Hey everyone, it's Zach with another New York Comic Con podcast. This time, you'll get to hear the press conference for Mob City, which is coming up on TNT this December. It's actually going to be sort of like a four-week mini-series. And you're going to have like two episodes a week for four weeks. There's going to be eight episodes in the first season. And at the press conference, we got to hear from Robert Knepper, Ed Burns, and Milo Ventimiglia. So take a listen to that, and then head over to the site and download and check out some of our other New York Comic Con podcasts.
The kinds of stories that, I mean, who isn't fascinated with the stories of bad guys? There's a lot more depth than the guys that that fight and do battle with the bad guys. It's, you know, oldest trick in the books.
I mean, you're from Brazil, you said, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at America in the old days, and maybe a little bit more than Brazil, a lot more than a lot of countries. We had people coming here from all over the world coming here back in the, you know, the turn of the century. And especially, like, when you go to big cities, like, I grew up near Detroit, and you see, like, the melting pot in Detroit, like in New York, Chicago, and all these different ethnicities and these different religious groups coming together, finding the dream of America, and then at the same time saying, I got to fight for my place in America. And they resort to mobs. They resorted to families getting together and saying, I'm going to take you out if you come onto my street. There's kind of a romantic notion about that nowadays that can be identified with being American, that we all had to get along, and we still are trying to get along. I think that's part of it as well. The glorifying it in a way, but also saying, this actually really happened in our country.
Can you guys talk to me a little bit about your characters and kind of what people expect when they turn into
one? Yeah, I play Bugsy Siegel, obviously a real character. He's sort of the head of the crime syndicate, I guess you'd say, in Los Angeles. Milo's character is a fictional character named Ned, who's a lawyer, but who kind of is playing both sides of the fence. And Robert's character is Sid Rothman, who is also a fictional character, who is sort of, I guess, the hitman, the muscle of the operation.
Guy, yeah. You're basically hanging out with the crooks.
And, you know, it's, in 47, it's when, I forget, what's the Neil's character's name?
Oh, yeah, it was William Parker.
William Parker.
Neil McDonough.
Basically, they're making a move. They want to, you know, basically squash the mob, if you will. And that's kind of what goes on in the first season. Frank would do a much better job giving you a succinct synopsis of what the show is, but that's the best I can do right now.
It's the war in 1947 between the cops and the mob.
Was it hard for you guys to choose? When you heard about the role, was it yes, I'm doing it, or did you guys think about what made you kind of hop on?
There was no thought, I know, for me, and we've all kind of openly
Frank Darabont.
It was sort of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I remember the pilot asking Simon Pegg that question. He said, I'm dying to work with Frank. And everybody, every actor you know that's worked with Frank says the same thing. I felt that way for years as well. If Frank calls, you try to work it out. And the fact that he likes you and he wants you in it is a really nice feeling.
Yeah.
You know, we each have our own specific things probably that he saw, that he knows. So you, wealth of films and respected in the business. For me, it was Prison Break, which is a beautiful ripoff of Shawshank Redemption. Paul Scherer would probably admit it. And the fact that Frank appreciates that and embraced it and loved Teabag, it was just great. The fact that he told me that he loved it. Milo, for you, what do you think?
I put myself on tape. I put myself on tape, and as I hear, I think Frank said, "Who the fuck is this guy?" In a good way, forget the language. But it was Frank. It was the material. It was what the story was. I mean, my family, you know, coming from Chicago and my dad's upbringing and all that. You know, I'd always hear the stories of old syndicate, crime syndicates, mob, all that. You know, and so who doesn't love a gangster picture? So for me, it was, you know, knowing that Frank is at the helm and he's the boss and we're running, we've got these great characters and this beautiful, beautiful, I mean, honestly, guys, such a beautiful script, such a beautiful script. And when us as actors get to see something on a page and you don't have you don't have to act, you just have to show up and say the words and it's going to be great. But then you get around such great players and you can embrace who your character is and you find new dimension and depth of things. It's just such a really wonderful process.
Thank you. Yeah, like, man. So many shows pushing violence and kind of breaking boundaries like that. Did you find any trouble with that on the network, or do you think the show's going to be as hard hitting and gritty?
No, I think because they're not, it's not network, it's, you know, it's, what do you call it, basic cable?
Basic cable.
So, yeah, I was kind of pleasantly surprised that it's, we're allowed to basically do and show and say almost everything.
Yeah.
And if you're going to make a gangster show, you want, you know, that that room to make it, you know, realistic but also fun. You know, so we were able to do that.
You're tackling a role that's been tackled very many times by some, you know, major people. So what was your angle on? Because you're also one of the first actors who actually books like him.
That's true.
He was a very good guy. Well, I don't know how many people are aware of that, but
well, thank
what
you
was
very
your
much.
what was your take on capturing?
My thing was I purposely
major character.
Yeah, I purposely did not look at any most specifically the Warren Beatty film. I watched a doc on Bugsy. I did some reading, a little research on the time period. But really, Frank just said to me, look, this guy has to he has to be larger than life. He walks into the room, people have to immediately love him and fear him and just have fun with that. You know, the other thing I've been joking around is, like, when I did my research and I saw you was from Brooklyn, I was like, all right, now I don't have to work on an accent, which, you know, works for me. If you've seen my work, you know, it's basically, I got one accent I do really well.
I can't wait for you to do, like, the caricature of you as you get older. Like, Christopher Walken is Chris Walken now, you know? Like,
one of the beautiful things I want to add to that with Ed when he came on to the show. I mean, everybody knows Ed Burns, right? And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm best friends with this guy since I was a little kid, and you can't. I'm starting to sound like you now. You can't.
I was gonna say, you're gonna go
see the Ed Burns thing. No, you can't manufacture that. You can't manufacture that kind of relationship. You have it or you don't. And Ed came onto the set, and immediately, instead of not that I had any preconceived idea that you wouldn't be this way, but you immediately reached out to everybody. You were just like, I grew up in Ohio. You were like an Ohio boy. You're like, hey, how are you? I want to talk to you. I want to know your story. And he really pulled us together. And that's a beautiful thing, because one, you don't have any time. You got to figure it out. And that relationship, the bunch of us, the boys, was boom, right there. And every day we told stories, every day we cracked each other up, we were curious about each other, we wanted to know about our past, about our families, and that's what these guys would do in real life. Ben and Siegel and Sid and Ned would, you know, we'd hobnob with each other, we'd take the piss out of each other, we'd joke with each other, we'd commiserate, and that real life bonding came into the character work as well. It was great.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, we feel like on the show real friends, probably because the, you know, not just the three of us, but all of us kind of like we clicked immediately,
Jeremy,
which doesn't always happen.
Doesn't,
you know,
happen.
I mean, we got really lucky.
You can't
check
it. Jeremy Luke and Richard Brake, two other posse. You're raising your hand, two other posse in the Crooks. Hi.
Hey.
I'm always bad. I don't know. Look at me. I look like trouble. I don't know. Well, my character is actually kind of great. He's a guy who operates on both sides of the law. He is, of course, the attorney for the mob, but he's so intertwined in the underbelly of the mob and the inner workings of it that you wonder just how much of the dark side he's in the shadow. So, you know, for me, it was. I don't know, kind of playing real life. Sometimes you're the good guy, sometimes you're the bad guy. Sometimes you just need to get things done.
I've done so many romantic comedies that I couldn't wait to have an opportunity to beat the shit out of somebody on screen.
Oh, man.
And it was so much fun. So it was very easy to tap into, you know, my dark and more violent side. I think most actors love playing the bad guys. The bad guys are always much more fun. No real effort required.
I would add that I learned years ago here in New York, Bill Esper was a great acting teacher, and he always taught you to play the opposite. And especially I find playing bad guys, like, bad guys don't think that they're bad guys. They think they're doing something really great. In this case, protecting family, protecting a best friend. That's how I go about it. I say, okay, what am I doing positive here, not negative? And then usually that works out.
Anybody else?
The last few years you do a lot of movies. How has changed TV now that you're a retired?
For me it was a script like Mob City. It was what Frank wrote. Coming off of Euros, coming out of Gilmore and American Dreams and Bedford and all those things that kind of raised me. It's always about the material, you know. And in this, there was just. I can't say it enough. It's just such a great script. I mean, it's funny because I barely pop up in the first episode until kind of toward the very end, and it was very selective about who got the entire script or not. My character hadn't even shown, and I was like, I'm in, because you see it on the page, you know. And it's always about that for me. Is what's the character? Who am I going to be working for and with? And what stories am I telling? So this was definitely something to step back into the TV arena with, because it truly was that special. Is that special?
And for all three of you, the roles, how do you guys prepare from, you guys have to look at your character and then study your character, or do you just transition?
I think we all work in very similar ways and also very different ways. I learned a long time ago to start with a character on the inside and go out. No, I was taught. They tried to teach me that, to start with the inside and go to the outside. But I still screw it up. I still get an idea in my head about something. I heard a famous iconic actor named Sterling Hayden, and I just kept hearing him in my head, and I stupidly went for Sterling Hayden's voice, okay, you know, like this kind of thing, and I had to go back and find organically what it was. Who was this real guy? The trick I realized with especially the 40s is don't go for that. Yeah, she, yeah, man, yeah, they're doing it, because it's just a cliche, and you're gonna shoot yourself in the foot. He was very good at not. They're very good at not doing that. I had to like.
No, but see, it wasn't that we're not. I just can't. It's hard.
You can't act. Is that what you're saying? No, you can't act a part. You have to be believable.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I can screw up all the time. People think I'm not acting.
I want to ask Ed, why do you think the bad guys became so charismatic, like Walter White?
I think what it is like, part of it I think is just quite honestly wish fulfillment. Everyone had, you guys are all in New York, somebody bumped into you on the sidewalk, a cab cut you off, a guy in a deli pissed you off. You want to go Walter White on them, or Bugsy Siegel. You want to take that fucker and bash his head through the window. I know you do. But you can't do that. So you put on Breaking Bad, and we get to live through those characters. I'm kidding around, but I think that's a big part of it. You know, people have always, it's a little bit of wish fulfillment in that we would love, we wish that in those situations we could act the way the gangster does. The other thing is, they're fascinating characters, these two guys are fictional characters in this piece, but, Frank had a blast writing them. Bugsy you know, a real character who lived a crazy, wild life, and that makes for great drama. So, you know, I think it's for all of those reasons.
No.
We'll go, you and we'll go,
everybody
go,
at once.
You know, for me, I mean, you know, look, Tom Hagen was a guy that sometimes, you know, he was asked to step out of the room. I think a character like mine, like Ned Stax, he's a guy who has the smarts to understand how to orchestrate something. So that was the way that I saw Ned Stax, which is more of a Sidney Korshak. He's a guy who's so smart, so damn smart. He can see all the angles and all the players and everything going on and know exactly how to maneuver and how to get, you know, do what his boss is asking him to. So that was the approach for me. Was less the guy who was family. Was a guy who was actually groomed to be in this business because somebody saw him and saw how smart he was and said, you're going to work for these guys. And he took it and embraced it, and they embraced him. You know, I mean, that was a big thing with our characters was, you know, my character was placed there, and this is my godfather, this is my guy, in a way. So I'm there to serve whatever needs he has. So it was coming from a very intellectual way, you know, smart way, being able to beat the game of chess. Yeah.
You guys have mentioned how just awesome the script is, and like for you that's what really drew you in. So are there any one-liners or character descriptions or scene descriptions that really resonated with you or spoke to you, or that even sum up Mob City for you?
Man, I think they all kind of hit in the trailer.
A lot of the trailer. You know, the beautiful thing about this show, one of the beautiful things is that TNT, wisely, I think, is going to air two episodes at a time for 3 weeks, right before Christmas. And it's one of those beautiful Christmas presents for everybody. And you just can't, you would spoil Christmas if you said what it was in that present, because it was glorious to act it. And now we see snippets of the product, and it's going to be a beautiful present, yeah, and we don't want to spoil it.
You're going to want to keep your ears open as much as your eyes are going to be glued to what you're seeing.
It's a little unnerving when you're reading the script, knowing that no character is safe. You know, you have a chance, and in Bugsy's fate, I know it's not the best.
Did you feel that on Heroes ever? No, you were a superhero, so you would always live.
Yeah, but they do shit like take my powers away. And like,
right.
But I actually, it's funny, I'd heard stories way back to like Tom Fontana on Oz where, you know, they're like, oh, I didn't die, but I get gang raped in the showers. This is amazing. Maybe you got that on Prison Break. You know, I think with, you know, with Frank and the script, you know, we had such a short amount of time, you know, 6 episodes and 2 months of actual production, that I know I personally wasn't thinking about who's buying it, who's sticking around or anything. It was just like, hey, let me just enjoy the hell out of this, because when am I going to get an opportunity like this to be around great actors, amazing crews, and a boss that gives everything, really gave everything to the production, you know? I didn't think about whether I was living or dying or anything. I was just like, I'm just going to enjoy the hell out of it.
Nothing in this business lasts forever. No show lasts forever, and no character on a show lasts forever. And when you're dealing with a genius, you just have to, like you say, you just have to step back and let him do that for you. It's not like I can go to Frank and say, can you please keep my character alive for the whole series? You just can't do that.
You know, if I may, I know that I know she's asked.
What would be the major influences?
The John Bunham book. I know in conversation I've had with him, Frank said he was influenced by the John Bunham book. And old,
the old 30s and 40s noir films.
The Shitter. Yeah. So you guys didn't hear that. He wanted to make, what?
A noir film with a character that had heart in a city that was going downhill. Close?
That's a good one, yeah.
All right, thank you guys. All right, cool. Thank you very much, guys. Yeah.